It's MLB draft season, and the Locked On MLB Prospects podcast is covering every future star of Major League Baseball. Host Aram Layton brings you the player interviews, farm system breakdowns every single day. Subscribe to Locked On MLB Prospects on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. How's it going, everyone? Welcome to a brand new episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast. Today is Sunday, July 11th. 2021. I, of course, am your host, Dan Wilson. And today, we are talking about the prospects, the farm system of the Philadelphia Phillies. Today is the beginning of the MLB draft in coordination with the All-Star Week headed out in Denver, Colorado this weekend. So the draft starting on Sunday, which means we got to talk to our prospects guy. It's Ty Daubert from PhilliesNation.com. He recently wrote a piece on Phillies Nation that I highly recommend, where he highlights all of the draft prospects from the Philadelphia, Southeastern PA, Jersey area. He highlights, who the Phillies could potentially get in this draft and a whole lot more. And he highlights that in my discussions with him. So without any further hesitation, here's my conversation with Ty Daubert in preparation of today's Major League Baseball draft.
We shall go in 3, 2, 1. Joining us in today's episode of Locked on Phillies, he has been a guest on this show before, and he's from PhilliesNation.com covering or specializing in coverage in the Phillies farm system, prospects, things of that nature. And with the MLB draft kicking off today, had to get his take and kind of just the outlook as the Phillies enter the draft, because it's certainly not been a kind process to the Phillies over the years. I think that's fair to say. They haven't necessarily been good at drafting, but it's never too late to start turning the organization around. So we're going to talk to our man, Ty Daubert, here. Ty, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me back on. It's always good when you can guest on a podcast more than once. It means you must have did a good job your first time, right?
Yeah. And I just caught myself. I almost called you. I was calling you Ty Daubert in my head all before. And I almost just went back to Daubert, which I did last time, which is not how you say your name. So Ty Daubert from PhilliesNation.com.
Close enough either way.
Yeah, whatever. So MLB draft starting off today. First of all, obviously the draft has not been, it's kind of been a bit of a sore spot for the Phillies organization over the years. I would imagine you would agree with that when you look up and down, when you have first round draft picks like Mickey Moniak, Adam Haseley. Now you have Spencer Howard, who we don't even know if he's a starter or reliever. Can he be effective at the major league level? Highly touted prospects that just don't tend to pan out within the Phillies organization. It's now even more important than ever to try and get these picks right. So we're going to go through a few things. One, we're going to touch on your article in a little bit, a number of the guys from the Philadelphia area, and one guy the Phillies are projected to get in a number of spots from the Philadelphia area. But I'll kind of just start with an overview. Is there anything specific as you look at this draft, specifically in the early rounds, you say the Phillies need to come away from this draft doing this or need to target that? And how do they avoid, as you see it, is this an instance where they need to avoid draft mistakes that they made before, or are these issues lying more within their development system after the guy gets drafted?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of tough. When you talk about the draft, what do they need? In baseball, it's not like basketball in certain spots or football where you're kind of picking for a position of need. In baseball, you really are taking the best player available, the guy you think has the best chance to turn out to be a big leaguer. It's really tough to draft for need. A lot of these guys, they won't even be up in the next couple of years. By the time they are up, that might not be a position of need anymore. So yeah, I think what they just need is a good player, somebody who has the potential to turn into ideally for the Phillies a franchise cornerstone. And those aren't exactly easy to come by, but I think you have to draft players with that kind of potential. There are a few picks in the early rounds that you can think of that maybe they had high floors, but the ceiling of that franchise cornerstone probably wasn't there. So Adam Haseley comes to mind, certain picks like that. Avoiding the super safe picks. I think they need to go with more smart picks, not the kind of players that have just the ultimately high floors, but the ones that you could really see, if you're the Phillies, they can't have a ton of bust potential. But the ones that you identify that you think you can help turn into that kind of player. You see it now with how Mick Abel is pitching in single A and some of the stuff that he's flashed throughout this season. I think it's that kind of pick. Did they take another high school pitcher in the first round? maybe not. That is always risky, but last year they identified Abel because of having no high school season. He probably dropped a little bit more than he would have last season, and that was the kind of player that they thought could become a potential ace kind of pitcher. So that's why they selected him. I think it has to be kind of a similar thought process.
Gotcha, for sure. So I really quickly, kind of before we move forward here, as you see this organization and this minor league system, you're obviously keeping up with the minor league system day in and day out. What is your read on a guy like Mick Abel? What's the guy you're reading on a guy like Bryson Stott, who we'll see later on today in the futures game? You know, obviously there have been a number of prospects who, again, have had that high rank within the Phillies organization for one reason or another. They don't pan out. Does it appear to you, and I know it's too early to call this, but does it appear to you that that trend will start to change with those guys?
Yeah, with, you know, Abel, from all that everyone's seen, there have been a few rocky starts here and there, but early on especially, he was trying to just really work almost fastball only, because there's a clip that came out on Twitter this morning. I haven't been able to watch a ton of Abel because there's no TV broadcast in Clearwater, which I don't know, that doesn't entirely make sense to me considering they are the spring training home of the Phillies. They have broadcast during spring training, but that's a discussion for another time. But so I haven't been able to see a ton of him, not being in Florida, obviously. But a clip came out this morning. We're recording this right now on, I guess, late Saturday night, almost Sunday. So Saturday morning it came out, and he looked really good. The breaking stuff looked really legit, and I think that's why he was working a lot with the fastball, just to get that really cemented so he could place it where he wants to. And the velocity is really impressive considering he's only 19 years old. I think that is the kind of pitcher that, if everything stays on track, is kind of could kind of live up to the hype. Bryson Stott, he started in high A, maybe a little surprising considering he was a college guy when he got drafted in 2019, but he made his way up to double A, started off fairly well, hit a little bit of a cold streak, but like you said, he's going to be in the futures game. I don't know if he's the kind of guy with the same kind of upside as Abel, that not many players are, to be honest, but I do still think there's a chance that he's like a starter level player. Some things have to go right, and it'll be seen whether he is a shortstop for the Phillies or a shortstop anywhere. But yeah, I think things are still on track for him to be like a starter caliber player.
I'll kind of, not to get too far off track here, but the trade deadline is coming up, and there's always the buyers or sellers debate, and the Phillies have been playing better baseball with a win later on here on Sunday that they would put them at 44-44, .500 at the All-Star break, which, you know, some people could say, hey, go forth, they're playing better, they're healthier, they're putting up runs on the board, or no, they should sell off whatever they can here. A, where do you stand on that argument? And B, if you are going to buy or sell, I mean, it's easy to say sell, say someone's interested in an Andrew McCutchen contract, if someone was interested in the Didi Gregorius contract, any of the veterans who are a little bit older on this team. But if you are going to buy, usually that involves giving up some sort of prospects to get major league ready players. I can't say I see any scenario in which they trade either of those two guys. Do you agree with that? And B, who in this organization could actually get that return if they do elect to go buying, that could actually net a return that would impact this major league team down the stretch of the season?
Yeah, as for the buyers or sellers thing, my opinion stands there that as the Phillies are currently constructed, they're just a little too good to sell. They have too much talent to have it be worth it to sell, because if you're selling, like, that's kind of going to be a rebuild thing. And a lot of their players are a little bit older on pretty big contracts. Like, that doesn't really net you a lot in prospects, and especially not prospects that are going to make an impact next year. Because even if you sell off a couple players here, it's not like a 4 or 5 year thing. They're going to be back in trying to win next year. So I don't think it's really worth it. I think either staying pat, or honestly, I think trying to buy a few pieces on the fringes at least is probably where you go. And if they are buying, if they are trying to acquire some players, some relievers, there are a few pitchers in there all throughout the system. There are It's tough to name names without knowing like who teams value, but in the lower minors, in Clearwater, in Jersey Shore, there are some starting pitchers that have had some success there that teams will have a few to pick and decide who they would possibly want to target. As for someone, you know, if you're making a big name trade, it's tough to really just pick one. I would be shocked, like you said, if Abel is dealt though. But if they are really going on all in on a huge deal, I don't even know who at this deadline that would be, like, you know, a Manny Machado, like a few years ago when the Dodgers acquired him. That player is not really out there right now. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of a wait and see thing. But I do think, and catcher is another one. I think if I had to identify one player that could really get dealt, a lot of people have pointed this out, but Rafael Marchand, who has appeared with the Phillies before, is a good defensive catcher. The bat's coming along. Not that there's a ton of power right now, but already really advanced defensive skills behind the plate. And they have a few other backup catcher types in there. So I think he would be the most likely if a team is trying to trade maybe a reliever and they want a long-term catcher in return.
Makes sense. So we're going to get back to your article here. Well, first of all, Phillies, if I'm just going off the mock draft that was put out on MLB.com just a few days ago, actually, here, and there's a number of mock drafts. You can obviously say, well, if this happens, then this is going to change. There's no real telling how the cards will kind of fall here. But one name that has been popping up a lot, and he's a local guy, and this is going to segue me into the article, is Benny Montgomery, who's an outfielder from Lewisberry, Pennsylvania, from Redland High School. How much have you gotten to see of him? How much do you know about him? What would you say the odds, to the extent of your knowledge, that the Phillies do end up with Benny Montgomery? And then again, we'll kind of get into the other guys from this Philadelphia area, or just like the Southeast PA kind of area here, because as you allude to here, it's actually a pretty strong year for an area that isn't necessarily known for its baseball talent when it comes to drafting.
Today's episode of Locked On Phillies podcast is brought to you in part by Fully Loaded Chew. Fully Loaded Chew is tobacco-free, long cut and pouches that give you the same pack, dip, spit, and buzz you're used to without tobacco. Available in 9 different flavors, Fully Loaded Chew is made with all food-grade ingredients and tobacco-free nicotine, the purest form of nicotine available. It's the only moist nicotine pouch on the market. All other nicotine pouches are dry white pouches. Nothing dips, spits, and packs like Fully Loaded. Fully Loaded Chew is offering a Locked On team listeners a special offer. Right now, you can try it for just $1. That's right, $1. Go to fullyloadedchew.com. Use that promo code Locked On for just $1 and free shipping if you use the promo code Locked On. That's LOCKEDON. Again, just $1 free shipping when you use that promo code at checkout. The next time you go for a dip, make it a Fully Loaded Chew. Head to fullyloadedchew.com. Also, to tell you about rockauto.com, which this episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store, to stock all of the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing only the brands their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Save time and money when using Rock Auto. Why choose to spend 30, 50, even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or car dealership? RockAuto.com is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for more than 20 years. Rock Auto prices are reliably low for every customer. They have everything you could need: brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, and even that new carpet. Go explore their easy-to-use website today to find the solution to your auto parts needs. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Visit rockauto.com.
Yeah, that was a story on Phillies Nation that you mentioned that came out written by me and Hunter Doyle, our intern at Phillies Nation. So you should definitely check that out, about kind of the local prospects and their preparation for the draft. Montgomery, like you said, a high school outfielder from Redland. Kind of when you talk about these draft classes, you really stretch what the Philadelphia area is. We're calling Redland close enough, but
within a 2-hour drive in any given direction. How about that?
Phillies fans seem to want him. It was kind of the same thing with Nick Bitsko last year. You just kind of, you call whatever Phil, whatever you want is the Philadelphia area. Just like when it was convenient for Phillies fans, Mike Trout was, he was from here until he didn't, until he signed an extension. Then he wasn't from here anymore. Millville was too far. But no, Montgomery, one of the more talented high school hitters in this draft. I have never seen him play in person. I've seen videos. I've seen game tape, and it's tough to say. I think he definitely has that upside, like I mentioned. But high school players are really risky in general. But if they think he has that upside that really outweighs the risks, like they did with Abel last year, I think there's a chance that they could go with it. But there are a good crop of college players in this draft too. A couple local ones probably won't go in the first round, but even players not from this area, as most are not, but there are a lot of talent in this draft that's kind of spread out through the early rounds.
Really quick before I follow up on those extra players, do you have a preference, you know, covering minor league baseball, taking a look at this? Do you have a take on the whole debate as to which direction you should go in terms of high school versus college talent as it pertains to hitters versus pitchers? Because obviously a lot of, you know, there's the argument of like, well, pitchers sometimes get a little bit more ready in college and you don't want to risk those injury factors. Then you get them when they're 21 years old, as opposed to 18, where sometimes outfielders, you want to get them when they're raw. Do you have a preference on where to go? Because I always look at the baseball draft as probably maybe the most unique in sports, and that you're getting kids either in like two very different stages of life, like coming out of high school or either 3-4 years after college. Like there really is no in between there. Do you see any stark difference, something that maybe gets under talked about, or a preference of one way or another there?
I don't think it's really under talked about, but maybe a little bit, that the high school pitchers are super risky. It's not every day. I know Mick Abel looks like he's on track, but it's not every day that you get a Cole Hamels in the draft and have it turned out. For every Cole Hamels, there's a couple Jesse Biddles in the mix, and you just have to, it's really tough to weigh the possible risks there versus the upside. It really is. I'm not a professional scout. I'm not a player development person. I don't know what the right formula is. All I can do is kind of just look at kind of the numbers and the tape and see what I think. But that is ridiculously tough to do. I think people do acknowledge that, but it's a really tough thing. High school pitchers, because you look at some of the, when I say numbers, I mean some of the velocity readings and spin rates and, you know, how much break they might get, the kind of advanced things, because you can't look at high school stats, especially for pitchers, because you can kind of compare these draft prospects, high school stats, like kind of like the videos of Zion playing basketball in high school. It's just like
of course they're dominant. Yeah.
The competition is just, it's nowhere near where it should be for facing somebody like that. So yeah, that's what I would say is the toughest part, and kind of the, where I stand on that. There are certainly times where the potential outweigh the risks there, and it doesn't always work out. You could have made a good pick and he just doesn't turn out well, but it's really tough to figure out.
Other guys you mentioned here in the article have been getting buzz, and again, Philadelphia area and Philadelphia area extended, if you want to call it here, but Malvern Prep certainly is the area. You got Lonnie White Jr., Chase Petty in the mix, Mason Black from Lehigh, Luke Hallman, and you also have, and I'm going to butcher his name, but Gordon Graceffo. I don't know how you, but the guy from Villanova. How much have you seen of any of these guys? What do you know? What can you tell us? Again, you know, kind of alluded to them in the article. Just what is the Philadelphia region producing here in this draft, or what do they have the potential to produce here?
Yeah, who you missed out? Anthony Solomito. He's from New Jersey. He'll probably, other than Montgomery, he'd be the highest of those players picked. Probably he's the highest ranked by MLB Pipeline. Hunter Doyle, who I co-wrote that story with, had him on his podcast, and he talked about you know, kind of the draft process, you can check out that podcast. And like I said, check out our story to see some of his thoughts. But Lonnie White Jr., he's from Malvern Prep, like you said, an outfielder. He's committed to Penn State to play baseball and football. And he seems, I don't know, he seemed, some of the things that he's posted and what you've seen, he looks pretty excited to join Penn State football. That doesn't mean that he won't sign, but that's just something about him. Some of the other guys, Black and Graceffo, they both are college, they were college juniors, so they can return. But Graceffo played in the Cape this summer and he was pretty good. Black played in the Cape after his freshman year a couple of years ago and he was good. I don't have a ton of info here. With it's a little bit different than maybe the NBA draft where you kind of have it figured out where people
it
are
is difficult
go.
No, I got you.
There's a lot of randomness here, but yeah, like you said, there's talented players coming from the this region, kind of Pennsylvania and New Jersey here. But it looks like Montgomery, Solomito and Petty will end up in the, they should pretty much be in the first round. That's unless something big changes, it looks like they'll be first round picks after tonight's draft.
Another thing that we didn't even discuss is how different the MLB draft is. You know, you're talking here about the fact that guys don't even have to necessarily sign. Like, they could just get drafted, decide to either go to college, stay the year. Like, you don't have to agree to sign, which is certainly different from the NBA and NFL, where it's a given that that guy's going to be on your team. Just as an overall kind of draft event here, you know, we're sitting here talking, we're working with the information we have, because it's a much differently covered draft, I'll say, than the NBA or the NFL, where it's, you know, one of them, it's probably the most hyped up off-season event. And baseball, it's in season. It's the first time they're doing it at the All-Star game. Do you like that they're trying to make it more of an event? Obviously, they have to do it here in the summer because they want to get these guys into the system by the end of the year and they're finishing the academic year. But just in terms of MLB draft coverage, like, if you were commissioner of baseball for a day, I'm sure that you'd change a lot of things. But in terms of the draft, is this how you would do it, or would you market it a little bit differently? Like, just take me inside there.
I think it's fine. I mean, yeah, I think it's fine. It's a lot going on right now, which is cool in some ways. Kind of hard to follow everything, I'd say, with the All-Star game, the Futures game, Home Run Derby, everything else coming up. But no, it's cool. I like that it's in the summer. Yeah, but it's just different to cover 20 rounds, and that's it's longer than last year, but shorter than before. 20 rounds coming up here. Just a lot going on with the MLB draft. It can't be covered like the NBA draft or the NFL draft, because these players, they don't come up right away. There are way too many for everyone to be able to know, for like the fans to know every single player being selected. It's not the same kind of thing. And that doesn't mean it's not a cool event to follow. It's not the same kind of thing.
Look, I mean, there's so many rounds that Mike Piazza was drafted as a gift, and you know, that obviously worked out quite well there for the Mets. Just really quick, kind of rapid fire away from the MLB draft and prospect talk here. So we were talking beforehand and I didn't want to ruin this conversation. So on Saturday, if you haven't seen this play, go check it out. Christian Yelich kind of runs through first base, and it was a distinct play that made its way around Twitter, around MLB.com, all over SportsCenter, et cetera, where he runs through first base, which of course you're allowed to run through, and by rule, and Ty, you're an umpire, an even more seasoned umpire than I am, that we've both umpired and been around.
I'm retired, baseball. Actually.
Oh, retired umpire. But you still have called a lot of balls and strikes. You've seen a lot of, you know, games out there in the field. As you see it, as the rule is written, which is that you're allowed to run through first base, but if any effort is made towards second base, then you're suddenly a live runner. Yelich had a little bit of a flinch. It's a borderline subjective call. Did the umpire get it right?
It looks like he takes a jab towards second. That's what it looks like to me. And it was enough that these MLB players, like, they don't want to make a joke out of the game. The player who picked up the ball after the overthrow, he tugged Yelich. I don't think he would have done that if he also didn't see this jab. he tug him. There was a jab. And the umpire didn't just make this up. The right field, I think it was the right fielder backing up, didn't just like see this out of nowhere. He took a small jab. And that doesn't mean you can't. A lot of people think at the amateur level, they think if you like run back to the base in fair territory, that means like you made a move towards second. That's not what that means.
Important to note. Yeah.
You can turn, you can walk back like to your left in fair territory. That's not what this was. This wasn't him turning around to his left. There's a small jab towards second. While he's looking at the ball, his body moves left toward second base, like he was only thinking of, like he was thinking about making a step. It was very slight, but once you do it, you're liable. You're a runner.
You're a live runner. Yeah.
Yeah. And here's the thing. If you, I don't understand why players don't just get back to the base quicker.
Well, I don't know. He tried to play it cool. I guess if he starts running back to the base, then he calls attention to himself. I don't think he was expecting it. Like, I genuinely don't think he was expecting it. I happen to think you're
probably not.
There is a little jab there. It's a subjective rule of whether he makes an effort towards second base or not. You're right. A common misconception, I should say, is the fair foul thing. You could be in foul territory and make a step towards second base, and that's still a step towards second base. Likewise, you could be in fair territory and not take a step towards second base. It's not really where you start. It's the direction you're headed in. Coaches teach you to turn towards right field, so it couldn't possibly be interpreted any other way. That's not what Yelich did here. He clearly thinks about it. He jabs a little bit. I kind of, don't ask why I drew this analogy, but I kind of thought of like the old NFL catch rule, where if you were sitting in a bar and you pulled everyone, like, did he make an effort towards second base? Like, did he make a baseball move towards second base? I would guess that most of the bar would be like, no, he didn't. But by the technicality of the rule, the way the rule is written, and I don't know how you're supposed to change that. Like, I would say that jab towards second base was probably enough for the umpire, immediately thought in his head. Like you said, the Reds clearly think that he does it. I'm kind of with you. Like, it's a tough call and a tough spot, but I think that's just the letter of the law. And don't hate the umpire for making the call. Hate the rule, because it kind of leaves so much up to interpretation.
The final segment of today's Locked On Phillies podcast is coming right up. But first, I have to tell you about betonline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Baseball season, it's in full swing, and you can track all the action at betonline.ag. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL, and all of your UFC, MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all of the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get in the game as teams make their runs throughout the season. Head to the website, use your mobile device, sign up today, and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit when you use that promo code LOCKEDON. That's LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. Also have to tell you about Built Bar. Built Bar, of course, is the best tasting protein bar ever. And did you know they have a limited time flavor right now? The Built Grasshopper Cookie, available this week only. You can get the new Built Bar flavor, the Grasshopper Cookie, at BuiltBar.com. Of course, it's got 150 calories, 17 grams of protein, only 5 grams of sugar, healthy like all the other Built Bars. And if you don't know the Built Bar flavors by now, you know that there are many delicious flavors, but there's coconut, cherry barcia, raspberry, mint brownie, double chocolate, salted caramel, strawberry, orange, cookies and cream, German chocolate. If you haven't tried all the flavors, you can get the mix box where you get 2 of each of those 9 flavors. Not only are Built Bar flavors the best tasting, they're healthy too. 17 to 18 grams of protein, calories ranging from 130 to 180 calories, 4 to 5 grams of sugar, 4 to 5 grams of net carbs, amazing flavors, all tasty and all healthy. Order today, get the Grasshopper Cookie, the raspberry, whatever you'd like, including that mix box offer. Go to BuiltBar.com, use that promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 15% off your first order. You can go to BuiltBar.com, use that promo code LOCKEDON for 15% off your first order. One last time, that promo code is LOCKEDON for 15% off at BuiltBar.com.
People on Twitter like to do this thing probably like once a week. I see it where they just post a video and try to get a dunk off on the umps. And there are so many times where you can dunk on the Major League Baseball umps because they'll you know, they're too quick to throw somebody out or something like that.
Yeah, Yelich got tossed, by the way, here very quickly. And
they handle a situation poorly. You can get your dunks off on MLB umpires and MLB, but they just do it wrong, where it's people not knowing the rules and then they blame the umpires for it. And it's like, if you don't like the rule, that's one thing. You can say this is a bad rule, but being like, oh, what an awful call. Like, these umpires should be ashamed. They got it right. They probably got it right. You see that with this call, which doesn't happen often, but you see it with that call, and you see it with like runners lane interference on a play in the infield, like the catcher fields a bunt or something. And it's just like, people don't, they don't know the rules, which is fine. There's a lot of intricacies in the rules, and you probably have to, like, I don't know, you need more free time if you've actually read the major league rule book.
I was gonna say I think we both have.
You're probably better off as a person for not knowing the rules, but don't just tweet like you do know them.
There you go. Is there a more misunderstood rule in all of sports than the infield fly rule? Like, literally one.
I don't know. People will be like, oh, the NFL catch rule. That's another one that people like just like to be difficult at about. I feel like that's like not as
Did he make a football move? Did Yelich make a baseball move towards second base? I don't know what other kind of move there is. A non-baseball move.
Infield flies up there, though.
No one understands the infield fly. Like, literally no one. I'll be at a game and it'll be runner on second, two outs, and there'll be a pop-up on the infield, and I'll hear someone yell infield fly. I'm like, not even close. Like, literally, runner situation wasn't there, the out situation wasn't there. Understand the purpose of the rule, it would make sense that that's not there. And, you know, everyone loves to chime in, like you said, you're right, because it always happens in a big spot. There was that big Braves call in a playoff game years ago in a wild card game, which
the right call, by the way.
You thought that was a good infield fly?
Yeah, he's camped under it.
Oh, see, I disagree. I didn't think it was routine.
Spirit of the rule, like that they're not turning a double play, but he was
that is the ordinary effort.
But he was under it with ordinary effort.
How ordinary was it? He dropped it.
He didn't. He ran away from it.
No, but it went 225 feet, that thing.
He was under it. That's what I'm going with.
That's what you're going with. I didn't think it was routine. But anyway, the point wasn't to sit here and argue that specific call. The point is that everyone
About
a play from 2012. It's that everyone, you're right, argues calls that they are not familiar with the rule with, which is just ridiculous. I don't think I've ever asked you this, and this would be another good question for someone who's, you know, more familiar with the minor league baseball circuit than I am, and also with the umpiring circuit, or now retired ump, as you mentioned. Would you be in favor of robot umpires?
I go back and forth. It's tough. There are, like, sometimes you watch MLB games, and when you have the box up, it's like, huh, there's a lot of wrong ball and strike calls, and it feels like there could be something better. But at the same time, I think catcher framing and receiving is like become so important that I think a lot, you'd have to completely overhaul how you evaluate that position. At that point, I don't see why you put anyone like good behind the plate, I guess like the running game, but A lot of it comes down to framing, and I think that's too big a change to really get rid of.
When you were an umpire, if you noticed someone framed it, would you give a call based upon the frame?
You see, it's tough because near the end of it, like when I was getting close to being done, like a year or two ago, a couple of the like better guys would start doing like how the major leaguers do, where they go down on the knee and they yank every pitch really far up. So it's really, when they do it for every pitch like that, it actually is really tough to tell like when they're exaggerating or when they're just doing it on a regular strike. And I think that's why you're seeing all the major leaguers do it. It's younger kids where they like really, it's a pitch on the line of the batter's box and they try to yank it to the middle. And it's like, all right.
That's a bit of a stretch, yeah.
yeah. You're not getting that one.
I used to make a point to try and ignore the framing, like just see where it crossed and call it on that. And it's
difficult. Yeah, well, that's what you try to do, but some of the...
No, I know, hard. But so it's in hard. Theory... So here's my thing with the robo-umps is I'm not trying to, you know, take anyone's job away. I get it. Their value as umpires would go down. But if your point is to get the call right, and honestly, the TV broadcasts have kind of ruined that, because now every broadcast has the box, like you mentioned, like everyone's an umpire from home, and like every guy in the bar can see if it's a strike or ball better than the umpire back there. So if you're going to open up this can of worms, but you're going to leave a human back there to do it, like these pitches are 90, mid 90s, sometimes in the hundreds with movement. I can't say that any human eye is trained to see like where that crossed, but it's so easy for Joe Blow on the couch to be like, ah, that's 8 inches outside. Like, what are you looking at? They've almost put the umpires in a horrible spot to not be able to review it, not be able to have any of the access to the technology in game that everyone watching the game can see, but the box is up there. So it's a constant grade, and umpires either get an A or an, like, you're expected to be perfect, and anything less is like you get an F.
Well, I mean, part of the experience though, Tim Kelly, also at Phillies Nation, formerly the host of Locked On Phillies. He has pointed out several times that complaining about umpires is like super fun a little bit.
And so, replay like, is taking a lot of that out in general. Like there's less ejections now.
Yeah. So I don't know. I used to be in favor of it. I think I've changed my mind.
You used to be in change your mind on replay as a whole or just the robot?
No. Sorry. This is the robot umpire thing. Replay. I like replay, but they have to change like how they do it. Too much of it is in all of sports. It's too much of a game, and it's not about like getting the calls right. It's about like just the challenge system in general is kind of bad. And then the whole need for like conclusive evidence. It's like you're rewarding bad calls on the field sometimes. Giving it the best look.
I hear you entirely, and I could do a solid hour on what I think replay in all of sports should look like. Ty, what do you got coming up at PhilliesNation.com? Anything you're looking forward to most with this draft, with this upcoming All-Star break? Really quickly, kind of just on the current Phillies team, they've been playing better recently. Are you you said you would be buyers based upon the timeline of the organization. Are you buying that this could be a playoff team? What are you putting the odds at? Have you seen enough bad baseball to weigh you down? Have you seen enough good baseball recently to bring you back up? Where are you at with the Phils?
The lineup's kind of healthy. That changes a little bit with the Alec Boehm COVID protocol situation. It's a good lineup when they're all going. And I wouldn't say they're favorites to make the playoffs or anything, but I think they're within striking distance. And if a few things go right, they could end up in it. Like I said, not likely, but not far enough out to just give up on it, I would say, because it's not selling isn't going to do them much good. They might as well just go for it. That's my take there. As for Phillies Nation, like I said, Hunter Doyle and I, we had that draft piece come out. You should check out on our site. I recently wrote a pretty long story on Spencer Howard, what the plan is for him getting his pitch count up. In AAA, his last start on Saturday, he threw 84 pitches. That is 16 higher, I believe, than 16 higher than he's thrown all season. So check that out. That's one of my recent on Phillies Nation. With the draft coming up, I'll have more coverage. So just follow along if the minor league side and the development side is what you like to follow with Phillies.
For sure. Ty, thank you so much for coming on. By the way, I think you might be the first. Am I correct in saying you're now a 3-time guest here on Locked On Phillies?
I think it's 2. I thought it was 2.
Okay, then maybe I'm losing track. So if you were, it might only be 2, in which case you join an elite club of multiple time guests. But
who do I join here?
Well, you're in the elite company of Johnny Heller. We could start right there. Tim Kelly has been on twice. Jason Cantor has been on twice. I know you're familiar with his work. I had a roundtable discussion last winter about the state of the Phillies, and I might be doing that somehow coming up at like now that it's the midway point at the All-Star break. I have to figure out how I'm going to schedule that. So I don't know if you count that as like a full guest appearance when there's a number of people all on at once. Jack Fritz has been on twice. I'm trying to think who else has been. There's someone I'm forgetting, and someone will, you know, give me flack for it or tweet at me like, hey, I was on twice too. But that's the company you're in. But for some reason, I thought this had been a three-peat, but in which case,
yeah, we'll make it one.
We'll make it three. You might have to go for three now. Ben Simmons isn't going for three, but we'll go for three with you.
That's right.
So we'll get you on here certainly down the stretch of the season. Phillies, like I said, getting a little bit more exciting here. A lot going on, as you mentioned, home run derby, all-star game, MLB draft, all in Denver going on this week. Happy to get Ty Dabbert from PhilliesNation.com. Ty, always a pleasure.
Thanks, man. Pleasure's all mine.
That's going to do it for today's episode of the Locked On Phillies podcast. Special thank you to Ty Dalbert from PhilliesNation.com for hopping on the pod, discussing all things farm system prospects and today's MLB draft, and for promoting his article, which, again, I do highly recommend. If you want to follow me on Twitter, at Dan_Wilson, for the podcast on Twitter, at LO_Phillies. If you search Ty Dalbert, that's TyDaubert. You'll follow all his work and see all the things he's got going on over there at PhilliesNation.com. Again, thank you to Ty for coming on the podcast today, and enjoy the week, everyone. Enjoy all the All-Star festivities, as well as the MLB draft, which starts today. Get all the sports news you need in less than 20 minutes with the Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.